Okay, so we've got this one night, and then we've got Passover next week, which you got to sign up for by Sunday if you're coming, by the way. We're at 260-something people as of like day before yesterday, and it tops out at 400, but we're full at maybe even less than that. So if you want to bring your family, make sure you register, go online and register for it. So I thought, well, here's what we do. This is what I'd like to do tonight. I want to share with you a little bit of the vision. So we have hired a children's minister. And what that means is responsibilities are about to get, over the next few months, are going to get reallocated among our leadership team. So praise God. And by the way, it's a man, and he's really cool. He doesn't have any of the, the childishness or effeminacy that seems to sometimes be connected to men who are in children's ministry. Like he's really legitimately a good guy and very easy to hang out with, and he will fit in very, very well at our church. And I'm really excited to have him. And my perspective at this point is the only hard thing. His name is Aaron, and the only hard thing was going to be that he's going to be kind of holding him back from wanting to just take everything over immediately. And so, which is a good problem to have. I'll always take that. But so part of that, it means that, Lord willing, some of the responsibilities that I've been handling that are ministry-based, some of those will start moving over to Rebecca as our ministry team coordinator. As our executive director of ministries. As she's in that role more and more, one of the things that I'm hoping to be able to have a little more energy for is to begin partnering alongside two or three of you guys and for developing what the men's ministry is going to be all about here. And I actually, one of the things that is true is that we were going to, before the church ended up hiring me, I was in the process of creating a consulting group with another man for going to churches and helping them develop a healthy men's ministry. So I want to talk a little bit tonight about what I think a healthy men's ministry is, large picture, and then us talk some about just get ideas. And we can, if this goes over into the next time, so 2 weeks, that's fine. Once we get past that conversation, we'll start engaging in some of the stuff that we want to see. I want to give you some of the concepts that we're talking about. So one of the things that we do here at this church is that we're not looking for activities. We are not an event-driven church. We're not an activity-driven church. We're not even a program-driven church. We're a discipleship-driven church. I will tell you, if you are looking for a discipleship relationship, they exist in this church. Now, the entire last year, we talked about this issue of discipleship. And so it really is a matter of developing relationships with other people, someone who's further along with you in the faith or is coming up behind you in the faith in regards to something. If you've got something to teach others, then you need to be teaching it. If you've got something to be learning from others, you need to be learning it. And so that's really what the way our church develops and grows. The way we do ministries is we treat ministries as training, not as activities. We treat it, it's just another extension of discipleship. And so when we say, for example, our children's ministry, you will immediately be corrected if you say in front of one of the staff, is there any child care at this event? And anyone on the staff will say, nope, no child care. We may be running children's ministry, but we're not doing child care. We don't do child care here, for example. We do children's training children to be prepared to be ministers somewhere down the road. And so that is what we do with the youth. I love the fact, I'm super proud that we had, that when now 6 years ago, whenever it was, when I hired Paul to come in, and when I hired Paul, I hired him and told him, like, I'm not asking to really, it's not about running a youth ministry. It's about laying the foundation for a youth ministry. You're going to be laying a foundation for student ministry. That's what I need you for. And that's what this church needs, is someone with a discipleship mindset and who has the right maturity to be able to lay the foundation for a student ministry. Well, one of the things that makes our church distinct, I think, it probably shouldn't, and it probably doesn't, as far, I'm sure there are plenty of other churches who do that, but who do this, but one of them is that, for example, student ministry isn't ministry, primarily isn't ministry done to students. It's ministry done by students, or ministry done to prepare students to do ministry. And so over a period of about 5 years, Paul canceled about, 50%, 70% of the things, of the activities that the youth were doing. And instead, some of them he replaced with things that were, like, instead of going, taking 40 kids or 30 kids to a baseball game. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with taking kids to a baseball game. But when you're saying, listen, we've got a limited amount of time and a limited amount of resources, and mostly that means time nowadays, you're going to take a kid away from family for a day or for 2 days or for 5 days. You want to do something meaningful with that. Not just fun, but fun and developing and moving them towards ministry. And so then the time, I don't even know how Paul may even know off the top of his head, but I mean, we went from taking, 20 or 30 kids to a baseball game to last year, Breckenridge Village was how many? 45 teenagers to go work in the yard and eat with and serve mentally handicapped adults for 3 days, starting at 8 a.m. in the summer. And so what that shows you is, one, it doesn't fail from a numerical perspective even. The kids grow as individuals, and when you ask yourself which one of those kids, again, there's nothing wrong with going to a baseball game inherently, but if you have a kid who's like, hey, all 4 years in high school or all 7 years I was in a youth group, I went to the Rangers game, great. Is that more or less likely than for 7 years I worked for all these hours with these people who can't give me anything back? Which one of those is going to take them into college when they start facing the pressures and challenges of college or career or that kind of stuff? Or when, which one has been more prepared to serve their wife and their kids? And so there are ministries like that. That is also the mindset of our men's and women's ministries. And so far, mostly our men's and women's ministries have mostly been organic. And I want that to continue. I want it to be stuff that it's stuff that the men of the church are saying, this would accomplish what we need to see in our life. This is what would accomplish what we need in our Christian walk. This is going to accomplish either the ministry done for us in the sense that, like, that it's training, ministry to men, meaning, which in our church means training, or the ministry done by men. Let me give you some examples. Like, ministry to men would include things that help men feel welcome and not alienated in the church. And we have a number of those. The most important one, of course, is that men are welcomed by other men. That's huge. And that they see other men present. And so that's a place where men's ministry. So I see men's ministry, by the way, more than any other ministry in the church. I see men's ministry as not an independent ministry. I see men's ministry not like a room in the church, but like the air conditioning in the church. It impacts every other ministry in the church. Our children's ministry should be more powerful because of the potency of the men's ministry in our church. The women's ministry should be more powerful because of the potency of the men's ministry in our church. You name it, every aspect, the worship ministry, everything. That's my opinion on how that should happen. So creating a masculine, friendly environment, things that affirm that it's okay to be a man in church. Because it's odd enough, and that's the kind of thing that I think often keeps us as men from inviting other men to church, is because it already feels weird, and a manly man or a tough guy, and he's welding next to you or something like that, and it's already awkward enough to invite him to church with you or whatever, much less if you to bring him to church and it's nothing but floral print patterns and you're singing too high. And do y'all know, by the way, that Redfern lowers almost every song we sing? He actually has to do that and lead the band to do that so that we as men can sing. Modern day worship songs are not written for men. As Shane and Shane said, right? Were y'all here for Shane and Shane when they made that line? Okay, we're all going to sing this. We're all going to practice this like men. And then Shane and Shane, we're going to sing it like we're women. because they both, like everyone else in that industry right now, sing way too high for men. But that's important. Training, skills training, theology training, preparation for training in family roles, generativity, meaning how we pass things on to the next generation. Like this is training to men. So that's part of why we do parenting times and marriage times. It's why we do this time, is to talk about this stuff. Ministry done, the ministry of the men. So outreach activities, worship service stuff, teaching roles, graduated involvements with the youth and the children, mentoring of other men and their families, leadership roles and ministry to widows and orphans, missions involvements. That's a big part of what we're talking about in regards to men's ministry, is the ministry of the men of the church. So here's the thing. All of our ministry here at this church, we have general philosophies, and I and the leadership board and our staff set some of those ministry philosophies and generalities and basics. However, we aren't the ones who make them happen. Whether it's an event that you would say, so this is, let me ask you, what are some of the things that you think, and I'm going to take notes on this stuff, that men's ministry to each other, okay, so it's ministry by the men of the church to the men of the church. Let's start there. What are some of the things that we need from that aspect of men's ministry, the ministry of the men of the church to the men of the church? What are some things we could be accomplishing that we need? Does that question make sense? Okay, so mentoring would certainly be one, right? There's no way to microwave that, and there's not even really a way to program that. If you're available to mentor people, that's the kind of thing you're going to have to be able to communicate to the people in your circle. We can't really do like a catwalk type of thing where we have men come up on stage and be like, he's available to mentor people. Who would like to be mentored by this guy? And so instead, that's why if you're someone who's available to mentor people, to disciple people, then you need to be involved in small groups of the men of the church. Not just men's groups, by the way, marriage groups and Sunday school classes or whatever else. It doesn't matter what you call them, and you're involved in it, and you're looking for relationships that develop this. You're looking for people who you can come alongside and mentor or be mentored by. I don't know. So that's, you know, our goal is for us to have a culture of that, or that's our culture. A couple of years ago, I think, you know, someone came in and was saying, you know, there's really not an opportunity for discipleship and mentoring relationships at South Spring. This is a person who was not at all involved in South Spring, but they had come to this conclusion. But what I've discovered is a lot of the men in our church somehow have figured out ways to be discipled and to disciple other people. In fact, you guys may appreciate, 4 years ago, I started contacting some of the men who I think of as, I'd love to see these guys really training up new leaders. And so I called John Geeling, and I was like, John, I need you to be mentoring some people. I've got a handful of guys who maybe I could get you to pursue. Like, could you do that? And he goes, wow, I'd love to, but, really, the only night I might be able to do it is Tuesday, and right now I'm meeting with Cody Breedlove, and he listed like four guys, and I'm meeting with them on Tuesday night, so I can't do discipleship on Tuesday night. And I was like, you're fine, John. So what you're telling me is you're discipling people on Tuesday night, so you can't disciple people on Tuesday? No, you're good. That's what I was hoping for. In fact, one of the guys he listed was one of the guys who I had in mind. I was like, okay, you're handling that. And then I got Alan Roseman at that time. I called Alan Roseman. I was like, Alan, I need you to be doing it. He was like, oh, I've already got this team of like five guys who I'm meeting with once a week, and I don't know if I can add another. Like, no, you're good. So this stuff happens. It happens. It's not going to happen at the mandate of the staff. It's going to be happening because you're pursuing those relationships, and there's no shortcuts to it. There's no other way around it. I just think more and more we can help create a culture of it. But that's, I think that is a huge one. It is a dire, needed one, and we need to be pursuing that, making ourselves available and communicating that. So, Matthew.
I don't like to use the word testimony because everybody thinks about their salvation experience, but a testimony of, you know, the last 3 to 5 years where life has with them, if we can get in a setting like this where a guy can get up,
Yep. I like that. Okay. That would certainly be a ministry of men to other men. What else? Yeah.
This has come to mind only because I'm kind of in this situation now. My thought is, what about like a skills and training situation to prepare for jobs?
Okay.
Just like that, because just here recently I found myself in need of, you know, and I guess like helping out in job searches.
Okay. Sure. That's a, I do think, I think men, so the idea here was skills training and learning new skills and even, I mean, sound like even almost networking in the midst of that as well. Again, those are, I don't know other than, you know, if we tried to create a master list, which I've thought about doing, trying to create a master list of skills that we have in our church of people who could go on, and maybe we'll do that online sometime. People can go in and say, like, here's, like, I know how to do carpentry and I know how to do this. I mean, and then, I mean, I don't know if Bobby wants people to know he's good with small engines, but I don't want anybody to know because then he won't have time to work on mine. So when you, if you ever see me walking, yeah, exactly. If he trains somebody else. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if you see me walking in like you did, was it, I guess last week, walking in with my blower, you can count on the fact that it's broken and I need Bobby to fix it. So,
I think you had a good point with I have a 7-month-old, which isn't big, but networking with people besides the people I see in my Sunday school class would be nice, having opportunities to be able to do that, to get, I mean, not that my Sunday school class is great, but.
Right. Right.
That would be nice to have opportunities to be able to do that.
So the idea behind life groups here, by the way, is whether it's the Sunday morning ones or whatever, is to develop friendships. I mean, that's its those are the purpose of it. And so a lot of them are multi-generational or multi-age or whatever. And so I think the best way of making those relationships is to get to know some of those people through that type of situation, and then you know them well enough to say, man, you've got this together. Or like when you've got a young kid, to be able to say, okay, you've already had a kid this age and you've got them out of the house successfully. How did you do that? And so those type of relationships are key. We've tried here, and every church I've ever been at has tried the whole, if you're willing to mentor people, sign up, and if you're interested in being mentored, pass that around, everybody write down names, do whatever, but I've never found a way to do that actually functions. I really think it is a matter of getting ideas from people. And so here's what's interesting, so the people who you do know, you might even say, man, none of them really fit what I'm looking for, but you can ask them, do you know someone who you could recommend to me to help me with this or that? Now, one of the cool things about events, and really over the last few years, Ryan has really organically said, here's some events, we'll get them on the books, we'll make them happen. And the only, in my mind, value of the events is it's a shorter time when you can get to know some different people who may not be in your group. So you go down to the rattlesnake roundup thing that you've done. Does it, how many years have y'all done that?
We did that one year.
Okay.
Fishing trip to Arkansas coming up if you're interested. I mean, y'all like road trips.
Yeah, I like them. Mm-hmm.
That's how you develop a relationship. Once you develop a relationship, then in my view, the disciples. So we do the rattlesnake roundup. We go fishing in Arkansas. We're going to go dove hunting on my property in September. We do hopefully a $60 some sort of party at the end of the year. All of that, the whole purpose of it is you got to know other people in the church. So when you see them,
Yeah.
When I have issues, I go to, I went to Don and said, Don, this is going on. What do you think? When I had to go through it, this is what he did.
Yep. That's the main value. So an event, if it's developing a skill set, or if it's ministering to other people, it doubles up. The main value of just an event that doesn't have that stuff is either to rest, which is a priority, and what the Bible calls fellowship, meaning it means nothing more special than getting to know other believers. And so we need that. And if you don't, the problem is you don't have those relationships, even just the base friendships. You don't know who to go to or where to go when you face a challenging time or when you need to be mentored or discipled. You have no idea who to go to because you don't know anybody. And so that's part of the issue. But on our men's ministry page on our website, it has some of the philosophy of our men's ministry stuff, and then it has Ryan's contact. If I click on that, it creates an email to Ryan. And he's got... He can send you an information, like, here's what's coming up. Or you can send one to the church, and I'm sure we've got the list of whatever the most recent stuff that Ryan creates a list and gets it out. And some of them we advertise, and some of them we don't. And it just depends kind of on the different things that they are. But hopefully, periodically, we send out an email with, here's some upcoming events. Again, the events are not there just to give you something to do. We all have plenty to do. And so it's meant to, part of why we don't hammer on all these events is because we're not event driven, and we don't want you to feel like, oh, I really need to be spending time with my family, but somebody's going to their feelings hurt if I don't go on the dove hunt. You know, I need to, we don't want to create that. If going on the dove hunt serves you and helps, gives you the opportunity to make friendships and have a fellowship thing there, great. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Good. What else?
So this may scratch and burn based on some of the stuff we talked about last year with discipleship and sort of the difficulty of setting up a relationship like that.
Right.
When we talked about discipleship, we sort of broke out into small groups and we had topics of discussion about, you know, what are issues with us or how do we need to be discipled.
Right.
But to go off what he said earlier, maybe one of the times that we do this setting, what we do is, you know, we've all kind of decided that we want to be here because we need discipleship in some way. That's why we're here.
Right.
So we're going to break us as we are up into groups. Maybe we break them up so that there's every sort of age represented in a group and there's topics of things to discuss about our lives, like how do we become better husbands, how do we become better fathers, how do we, whatever that is. And you know, maybe we could do it similar to some of the stuff that you've done in the past. People write down or send in key questions or issues or whatever, and those are going to be the jumping off point for the discussions. But the discussions are us in personal groups, and that's a way to facilitate that in a setting where whole lot of people have already decided we're going to devote our time on Wednesday nights to coming here anyway.
Right.
So we've gathered the people, now just divide them up and say, all right, we'll do discipleship for the next 7 weeks, 8 weeks, every Wednesday night. And if it goes beyond that, that's fine. And if it's not, then the life group idea, like I'm not married to it forever. If it's not working out, but that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, we can mix some of that in. That's a good idea. Having some of that, like we did last time, where we had tables. So you caught me on that. You realize that's what I was doing.
Not a new discipleship, but doing discipleship, like
right.
Actually having those meaningful conversations. Not what should they look like, but doing them.
Yeah, and you were doing that last time too. You just didn't know it. That's part of why I wanted those little small group conversations about how would you do this, what keeps you from this, is because that gave you some opportunities to meet some people and have some of those conversations. So.
Yeah, but I mean more intentional conversations as far as things in our life that we want to develop.
Right.
Not overall general discipleship. But
right.
The topics are more specific.
Yeah.
And more sort of in your face.
Yeah. Okay. What else? Yeah.
But if they know that, you know, if it kind of makes it personal, maybe you get from that and you have, you know, team of 3, 4, 5 people who already have signed up together. Then, hey, look, you're a leadership position now. You need to go and make this personal. Like, you want these people going. You want to get to know them. And then stand up, you know, on a don't realize how to fit in. So it's a matter of teaching and educating to the guys here who are interested in discipleship.
Yeah, I would even, so one, we do training every year, and usually something like 3% of people come to them, because your lives are busy and you've got stuff. So we do things like, here's how you ask good questions, and here's how you guide a conversation, and here's how you, but very, very few people come. Here's what I would tell you, though, to me is even more, to me, that follows up with that is that personal aspect of it. This is what's huge about that. So, you know, you've probably heard, and I may have even said it, but the discouraging statistic about the growth of people who aren't affiliated with a church at all. But then it turns out that some massively high number of them, like 70%, if I remember correctly, I hope I'm not making that up, but about 70%, if I remember correctly, said that if they were invited to something by someone, they would go. Here's what's wild. So I invite people to church all the time. But the minute that they find out I'm the pastor of the church, that totally undermines my invitation, right? They now know I must have something, because they think I get paid on a percentage or something, I guess, right? It's a commission thing. But it turns out when you ask people, when I meet people and I ask them, how many times have you been invited to church here in Tyler where everyone goes to church and where everybody... And it's amazing that probably the most common answer I get is no one ever has. So I don't know that I'm convinced anymore that these are nuns in that they don't have any religious affiliation. I think they're nuns in that no one has invited them to be affiliated with a church yet. And so when you think about that, like when was the last time you invited somebody to church? And church isn't the solution. Jesus is the solution. But church is a good way, one, to meet him or to get past the barriers that you have for him, unless there's something about the church that you're really concerned about, that you go, I don't want to invite somebody to this. They might see this, and that would be bad. And so if there's something like that, then we need to work to change those things. But I will tell you, I think one of the things that we're missing a lot of times is for men to invite, whether it is specifically to, because here's the deal. about announcing something in church. Paul will back us up on this. We largely make announcements in church as a discipline and to let people know stuff's going on. But if I say, what did we announce last Sunday? If I stopped you as you're walking out of the church on Sunday morning, go, what did we just announce? You probably have no clue. So we regularly, one of the great things that leaves us scratching our head regularly, which, I mean, I'm sure it would be the same if we weren't on staff, is when people say, then they come up and they say things like, you know, hey, can I, this really happened a couple months ago, can I start giving to the building campaign yet? And you're like, any time in the last 2 years would have been fine. Like, we did the emphasis, remember the whole month-long emphasis thing? And you remember and we've been announcing, and we've got the posters, and and we had these little prayer cards, and everybody got the business, and the, because people's lives are so busy and crammed, they don't hear. I mean, it happens even in my family. Or it happens even with me. I'll have to text Elizabeth or Rebecca or Paul or somebody and go like, now when is this event again? I think that's all of us that naturally does that. What gets people's attention is when you have the personal, hey, you know what, you ought to come to this. Hey, you know what, you ought to be a part of this. And so it's not, we don't know. I mean, apparently some times people hear it, but regularly things have been in the bulletin, on the website, announced from the stage, whatever, multiple times over 6 weeks, we will have people come up and say, I didn't know anything about this. Even though they've been here for all of that. And I'm not picking on anybody. I think that's just the nature of it. But if we say, and think about the difference between how many times we talk about like the Passover meal. But if someone said to you, oh my gosh, I did the Passover last year. I want you to experience it this year. Why don't you come this year with us to the Passover? How much more likely you are to than the paid Christians telling you you ought to come to it is very different. And so I think that's a key, is especially with people who are unchurched, they're not in church all the time, having someone say, come hang out. What you laughing about? Yeah.
My dad came just this last Sunday. I mean, visited sporadically. Like, I think you come Sunday. As simple as an invitation.
Yeah.
Just a reminder, like, hey, we'd always love to see him, but just to be able to say, hey, why don't you come this Sunday? We'll be here at this time.
It really is humorous how often people will come when they get invited. I had this great master plan, some of you may know about how we were going to develop some of this stuff. The way it started was we turned strangers into guests by our generosity, and we turned guests into members by our hospitality, and we turned members into ministers by our discipleship. That's how I started. And we kept growing as a church from people visiting, but not members. And so I tried to figure out what is it going to do that's going to cause people to go from... So what I realized is there's a population there that we had missed. They go from strangers to guests, and they don't then go from guests to member. They go from guests to attender. And so from guests to attender is what happens through hospitality. They love being here. It's great. They come week after week, month after month, year after year. They attend. So the question was, how do you get them from being an attender to being a member? And the strategies failed until we found there's actually one good way to get people from being an attender to a member. Have you heard what it is? Yeah. You ask them. At the personal level. Yeah, you hire Lance Sturrock to ask them, to invite them. Hey, we would like for you to become a member now. And it's amazing how many conversations that are, hey, we'd like for you to become a member now, end with them going, oh, okay, I'll do that. What do I need to do to become a member? So even though our church has not grown numerically as far as attendance in the last about year and a half, our membership has done this. Because it turns out when you invite people, they do stuff. They get involved when they find out they're wanted and they're willing, and people can get them involved. So I really like that, the personal touch. But by the way, that's got to be each other. It can't be the paid guys all the time. All right, any others? Yes, sir.
Chris, I've been here just a little while. Since I've been here, I've met two couples I know. One sits back there, and he's a
Mm-hmm. She's right. That's that doesn't bother me. Right. Yeah, that's the safe place. People start back there. Reaching the corners of the pasture. Yeah. Well, here's what's interesting as far as the way the church service is set up on Sunday mornings. Introverts and guests sit in the back thirds of the two sides. Especially the introverts love this side right over here. And so they all sit with Steve DeMint over here. And so what happens is when we as members, especially whatever, when we only engage with people in the sphere around us, we leave guests to greet each other. Now, that's what we mean when we say get out of your chair and move away from where you are and go to a part of the room where you normally aren't, especially the backs and the corners, and say good morning to them and greet them. We can see from on stage that still, even though our church is way better than average, still what happens is people typically, they look around for people they know and they go greet people they know. And then still, the majority of people don't ever leave their row. So I've threatened to do this someday. I think I'm going to just stand up there on stage and call people by name who are still standing in their row. To go like, you've been a member here 4 years. Get out of your row. No. Now you get out of your. I mean, it's get out of it. It's not about you. If you're coming here on Sunday morning so that you can feel comfortable or whatever, then you're not a member minister yet. You're still an attender, even if you are a member. That meet and greet time is for us who have been here for a while to get out of our chair and go find someone who's in a corner or in a back spot. That's what makes a church a hospitable place. This is one of the funniest things about being a leader of a church is how little power I have to make the things that need to happen in a church happen. It's crazy how little power I have to make them happen. The whole reason we do this last part of the spring where I have just the men in here is because I can speak a little more in the face of this population and this audience and say, we've got to be doing this. And we have to remind us every year at this time, we've got to be doing this. You've got to be things like, you've got to be greeting. You got to get here on time. If you're in charge of leading in children's ministry, it's really important you're not showing up late. I looked and tracked, and I really think there was an age population that did not grow for about a year in our church because that children's ministry couple, that whole team, the set of like two or three couples, were chronically coming into class at 9:10 or 9:15. They're supposed to be there at 8:45, 8:50 at the latest. So what happens if you're a guest and you bring your four-year-old to church? And you get here, because they get here on time, guests do. So they get here at 8:45, 8:50, and they go into the room where their child is now going to be taken care of for the next hour. And the people taking care of their child for the next hour show up 15 minutes late. So now the guest has to walk into the service 15 minutes late because they've been up there with their child who doesn't know anybody. What do you think of the odds are that that couple comes back the next week? I would say zero. And so it's important that we as men are engaging and investing and volunteering and leading in these things, but that we are not, we're making sure that this is, that people are actually having a positive experience so that they can't hide in the corner and end up having to greet each other so that they are going to be greeted by somebody. That's why I say I want to see a population explosion in here when we do meet and greet time. And by the way, it doesn't start then. Before that, you're greeting people and you're looking for people and you see people you don't know and you're targeting them. It's so hard for us to do. We get no endorphin kick from greeting new people. Our endorphin kick, our hormones get spiked when we see a face of someone we don't know. And as an additional little poke, I'll say part of the endorphin kick may be because you've not seen them in 3 or 4 weeks, because that's how long it's been since you've been at church. And so it's 3 or 4 weeks later, you see them, and it's, oh my gosh, I've not seen them in a month. And so you focus all your connection to them instead of the people around you who you don't know. And now you feel even more silly greeting somebody because they've been here maybe the last 3 weeks. You don't know. And so we've got to get out of those bad habits and greet people we don't know and hunt down the people we don't know and get that out of that system. And I'm not preaching to you. I have exactly the same thing. There are people that I love to see, people who I know on Sunday morning. That's a great. It feels great to see people. You see Jeff's son and my son every Sunday charge across and slam into the middle of each other here because of how cool it is they get to see their friend on Sunday morning. I mean, that's just like a gift. But over time, hopefully we will teach Hank and Holland to greet people that they don't know on Sunday morning, not just look for, where's Hank, right? But we're doing the same thing, and we've got to break those habits and reach out to people that we don't know. And as we've got a lead in that, the men set the tone, the men set the culture. Of any given population, the men are going to be the ones who set the culture. If we don't do set the culture, then then a feminine culture is created, and then men will not feel at all valued. Yes, sir? Yeah. Yeah. The question was, how would you go from renter to owner? What would motivate you to go from renter to owner? What do you think?
Responsibility. Getting people to come to, you know, like, or at least from my experience personally, our Sunday school class, we've got a lot of people that come to Sunday school class, and typically the men that come, you know, and bring their families a couple times to Sunday school class, they tend to really get plugged in, and then once you're in there, we develop pretty good relationships in the class. You know,
yeah.
And through those relationships, I mean, all the stuff that you're talking about wanting to accomplish, a lot of that is facilitated through this class.
Yes.
And I don't often, I only get to go to the service like half the time now, but so I don't know if it's always communicated what Sunday school classes are available or life group classes, and I don't know if they always know, but I also think, you know, it's our job, just as you're saying, to invite people to go to our class. Hey,
absolutely.
We've got this class of parents and kids that meets at 9 o'clock, and we're out there in the portable building. I think that's one of our jobs. And we've made a lot of really good relationships through that class. And I think probably the second place that I've built the most relationships here is just the Wednesday night meal.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first came, I was so much better at it because every time I came, I was making sure, let's go sit at a table that nobody we've seen before.
Never right.
Met this person, let's sit there. And recently I haven't done as good a job of that. But when I was doing that, I was meeting a lot of people and making a lot of relationships that way as well. But I think that process is how you get involved. And then you start taking ownership. Oh, you know, I know these people. And I think you start feeling more ownership and you start really making those connections.
Okay, good. So one is, one way of turning from the renter to the owner, stepping in that ownership, is you invest something in it. So you invest time, you go out, you do that. As much as I would love to be able to tell somebody, listen, you're new here, you don't have to do anything. You just sit back, someone will wrangle you in, and they will bring you to a class. I promise this will happen. It doesn't always happen. It should. It'd be nice if it always did. But we know from life, I mean, this is still just life, even though it's church, and we tend to get out of things what we put into them. And so there's some part of, well, let's find a small group for you to be involved in. Let's find a smaller group for you. Then that way you can get to know them. Yeah.
I was going to say, to tack on what John said, you know, how did you go from renter to owner, you know, from apartment to house? And the answer was, it's you become your house.
Okay.
Yeah.
How we get there, I don't know. There's a half a dozen ways I can
trying to get an investment in, like you said, into the church people and the physical location, I think makes you more care when you come in who it is that's that you're seeing and why it's important to greet them and make them part of the church family.
Yeah. It's definitely, I mean, Jesus said our heart follows our treasure. There's not, I don't know that there's a way around that rule. Yeah.
It's funny you said that, because I was even taking the literal, what you were just saying, that our actual house, it, you know, we talked a while ago about going from a stranger to a guest.
Yeah.
I think sometimes that's a hard jump, because you're going from a stranger to, I'm going to walk in church. And I think one of the things I love about our church is hospitality goes beyond, so much of what we do is outside the walls of our church.
Huh?
And I think as men, not always, establish that relationship, then when we say, hey, you should come to church with us, it's based out of, this isn't just this weird guy that is inviting me to church. But that's so hard for us, because we think, well, if I invite you to my house, you're going to like see how dysfunctional I am and how jacked up my kids are and how, so I'm not doing that.
Right.
But if we can really like open up ourselves to be known, then I think that opens up so many opportunities to invite them to church. And then when we see them, we're like, oh, okay, you were at my house, and you were, you know. And I think, you know, and oftentimes one spouse is a lot more open to that than the other. It's not always the husband or the wife. But I just think there's a lot of power in when you make that invite to church, if it's based out of already having a relationship. And sometimes someone's a lot more apt to come over to your house for dinner than they are to show up at a church building.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as men, that's an area that we can always grow in, is being open to open up our life to someone.
Hey, right.
Come over to our house, and there's a lot of power that comes from that.
I've even been, so the idea of inviting someone to your house, I've been amazed. So in our neighborhood, we've done a lot of years, I'm trying to think if we did it this year, but a lot of years we do a July 4th kind of a cookout in the cul-de-sac, and we do some of that kind of stuff, and then you have this, you actually know who the people are around you. And I think it's normal now for people to have no clue who lives in your neighborhood or anything, no idea the names or the people or whatever. And so it is a good, and yes, it's strategic, but at the same time, it's valuable in and of itself to help people do that. What struck me about it was, so just the other day, coming in and speaking at Mothers of Preschoolers, and so I asked them how many of them, so there's a MOPS program at nearly every church in Tyler, I think, and that again, that stands for Mothers of Preschoolers. And so I said, how many of you go to this church of all the MOPS couples? I mean, all the MOPS ladies. So there's like 30 of them. How many of you go to this church? And two of them go to this church. And I was like, well, how many of you go to any church? And only like three more of them raised their hand. And I was like, okay, so why are, this is crazy. So here we have like 25 unchurched people or unconnected people in our church at a MOPS event. Well, we know perfectly well why they're there. They got invited to come to MOPS. That their friends said, oh my gosh, you've got a preschooler, you ought to come to our MOPS group. And whether that was done at the personal level or the friendship or whatever else. So I'm like, that's part of why I'm excited for Rebecca to get to strategize. Okay, how do we get those 25 women to then begin to invest and find more than just the MOPS program here? How do we get them to do that? Yeah?
Okay, so I guess delving a little further, this, we were joking around about the fact that, you know, they're having child care.
Right.
But there's so many other opportunities for people to go to, I'll use the old term, the parachurch.
Right.
That there's our culture, hey, that's my church. MOPS is my church.
Right.
BSF's my church. Tonight's my church. And that's hard to deal with the church culture that has disconnected from the body. The not the body of Christ, but the body local.
Right. Well, what's funny is I will tell you, you're exactly right. It's natural for us to find a different church. If it's something that is, especially if it is, man, what I'm looking for, my community, my fellowship, my worship, my learning is all done here. I don't consider it a bad thing that they're in MOPS, even if they're, it's not the end all to get people here on Sunday morning in the big service. In fact, I would say if you're choosing between going to small group or serving, so we got three options on Sunday morning and we've only got time for two of them. And a lot of you only come to one of them. But if you said, I can only do two of these, I can serve or I can go to the big service or I can go to a smaller group and get to know people there, I would say when you're shifting between two of them, I think it's totally appropriate to say, I'm gonna be in my small group every week and I'm going to be in the service when I'm not working with children. And when I'm working with children, what you may miss is the service time. As much as I think there's great power and purpose in learning and worshiping as a community, and I think there is, I think when it comes to life change and the impact of the gospel, that's the smaller group is going to be a more powerful representation of that. I think you can come to church Sunday after Sunday after Sunday and not successfully not grow as a believer. I think you have a much harder time doing that with six or seven other couples going through a study together, or six or seven other people, men or whatever, going through a study together. Like, I think that's more likely to have impact. So I don't think of the pulpit as the end all. Getting you in here to hear what I'm saying is not my goal. But if you're just involved in MOPS or you're just involved in a men's group or whatever, and you're not involved in anything beyond that, then you're not getting the chance to have that community. The things don't need to be in competition with each other. But yeah, there's so many other options. I think it's one of the fair questions when I was asked, why wouldn't I just stay at home and listen to some preacher who's better than you on a podcast and then listen to the music I like on my Spotify on Sunday morning? Why shouldn't I just do that? And if there wasn't a community nature to it, I would say, like, yeah, no, that's a good point. I think I worship personally more powerfully out in the woods or up in the mountains, not in a building. And so, but I can't do it in a community like that. And I think there's great power. I don't get the chance to serve you if I'm up in the mountains by myself and I'm not living out the Christian life I'm not serving too. Yes, sir.
I know that works for me. If I know somebody's counting on me, and I'm not talking about new people, I'm talking about making this group stronger in terms of those of us who are renters and owners. I'm a renter, by the way.
So what's it going to take to turn you into an owner? And I don't mean that at the personal level, but that's a good way to ask it in my mind. What does it take to get you to become an owner? Okay.
And I mean, maybe it's a fault of mine. I ought to be saying, hey, now listen, I'm here. I'm ready to do something. It's not that guy.
Okay.
The only one in here is not that guy, but I'm not that guy. I'll be quiet.
Yeah. I'm wondering if this counts. That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, does this count as an approach? yes, sir. Okay.
Who's been charged with a responsibility. And I think that to me is far more motivating than saying, okay, this is now yours to do with as you want. It's more of, I'm giving this to you to take care of on my behalf.
Okay. So from the question of renter and owner, this is more like it's not really one of those necessarily. It's more like you're living in somebody else's house, taking care of their stuff. I'm responsible for what's going on here because it isn't mine in a way. It's not mine as an owner. So here's an interesting, so owner is healthy if you think of it in terms of responsibility. Owner is not healthy when you think of it in terms of possession. So you're right. We're not owners in that we don't possess this. We are owners in the sense that we are responsible for it. Okay. Yeah.
And you told me, well, that's an interesting analogy because had I said I was cheating on my wife, then that would be a problem with the covenantal relationship. Whereas a girlfriend's more just a social relationship. And so for me, being a member here, I feel like I'm in a covenant relationship. So it's kind of like the same thing as, you know, where you work, right? I mean, if in the car business, even though I don't own the dealership that I go in and do consulting to, if I walk onto the lot and I see a piece of trash going around, I've got to stop and pick it up because although it's not my dealership, that's where I make my living. This isn't my church, but it's where I worship my God.
Mm-hmm. We talked about last year, if you were here, we talked about shepherd mindsets. And that's why I think that's biblical. I mean, I think that's the correct one. What we are is shepherds. We're under shepherds. It's not our sheep. We don't own them, but we've been made responsible for them. And that's the picture. Even Jesus distinguishes between a shepherd, an owner, and a hireling in John 10. And so a hireling goes like, man, that looks hard. Or I could suffer, or that I could have to pay. I don't want to do that, so I'm out of here. Versus an owner says, no, I'm willing to pay something to make this happen. I'm willing to invest and engage. Let me just tell you just from experientially, and then we'll wrap up our time. We'll pick this up in 2 weeks. This is a good conversation. And how do we encourage people who are in that to engage? How do we get them to engage, if that's what God has for them? I don't want to assume that. I mean, if that's what God has for them, how do we give them that and give them that opportunity to engage in a capital C church in this local small C church? So I will tell you, here's my experience. Now I'm going to tell it from the other direction. The people who end up here. So the people who are here and 5 years, 6 years, 10 years, 15 years later, they're here. Or if they're somewhere else, they're there for out of engagement. People who are engaged and are still engaged. Terrence isn't here, is he? I know I've used this example before, but I love this example so much. So Terrence, I think you would have thought of Terrence Thedford, I would have, as being kind of on the verge of, am I in or am I not in? I'm kind of a hireling. I mean, I'm kind of out here. I'm a renter, so to speak. And then one day he came and said, I've really realized I'm waiting for someone to come to me and say, hey, I know your son is really, really sick, and you're in and out of the hospital all the time. We need to take care of you and your family because of this. You've got this chronically ill child. And I realized, how are you supposed to know how to take care of a family that has a chronically ill child? You don't have a chronically ill child. No one on the staff has a chronically ill child. How would you know what we need? Why am I waiting for that? I need to be the one to create that ministry. And so he did. And it was the way I think, especially for Christians, the whole role of a church, the main role, in my opinion, for a Christian of a church is to be a hub for the ministry God has called you to. And so I don't know all of your ministries. I don't know what it is that, you know, what is RyanGardner.com ministries look like? I don't know exactly, but he needs a home base to build that ministry, to gather disciples to work with him in that ministry, to find like-minded people who are passionate about that ministry as well. And so that's exactly what he did when he came and did that. And we ended up naming it Thomas Ministry, and it's raised $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000 or $60,000 in the last few years to give to chronic families with chronically ill kids. And that's, I think it's natural for us to, you know, the staff is supposed to do that, or that, like I said, the paid Christians are supposed to do that or whatever, but I don't think that's necessarily. So the people who are still here are those who have engaged at that level. And I mean, again, for anyone who is a renter or anyone who's saying, like, I don't know where to get engaged. There are, even if you would just become part of our greeting team on Sunday morning, we need about 50 people every Sunday morning to do that, and we have about 25. And I don't know that we'd ever have a limit. I don't know that I'd ever go like, nope, too many people greeting people. I don't know that I would ever feel that way. I would love for the parking lot to be filled with people by 8:45, greeting people as they come in and helping them get out of their cars and whatever. I mean, we'll, you know, whatever it is, but I don't know your heart and your gift and your specific talents and your passions or whatever. So, anyway, let's stop there. We're at 7:35, so I need to get you guys to the ladies who are going to be getting out and getting kids too. I want to pray over us. This is a good conversation. And as far as saying, like, how do we take the men's ministry and not just make it about how do we take care of ourselves, but how does that become the way we then serve in the church and serve in the capital C church around the world? And how do we impact things? And you've heard me say, I think if we had great marriages, we couldn't build buildings fast enough for people. And how do we grow in that kind of stuff too? So, but I will tell you, it is my opinion that it is not the women who sets the culture of the church. It is the men. I've been in too many churches, and I've seen the level of dysfunction is about the men in the church. And so for us to engage and be willing to step out and lead and pursue our families and our wives and our God, that seems to be what dictates. That's why I like doing this at the end of the spring, is to spend a few weeks going, all right, what does this mean for us? And I can do the pep talk version of this, and we'll do a little bit of that, but I want there to be a sense of ownership. That's good. All right, so let's pray. Father, thank you so much for these men, and I thank you for these great questions, hard questions, and even challenging questions and whatever else. I thank you for the vulnerability of all of it and for the challenge of all of it. And Lord, I pray that you would lead us through this, that you would guide us in this, that you would point for us what it is that we need and what we need to be doing to serve you. You are who we answer to. You are who we're going to have this conversation with someday, face to face, about the kind of lives that we've led. And I pray that we would not lead empty lives, and we wouldn't pass along empty ways of lives that have been passed along to us. But I pray that you would help us to figure out new ways to engage in your work in this world, to be your ambassadors, to be your salt and your light, to be your cities on a hill. And I pray all of this in your Son's magnificent name. Amen. Thanks, everybody.